back to another week of the Public Lands Podcast. It's been a month and a half since the last Public Lands and Environment News Roundup, so we're overdue for looking at some of the most important and interesting news stories affecting our public land, water, air, and life as we know it. This summer has witnessed a number of exceptional guest steward interviews and exchanges with conservation organizations. I'm now on my way back from Orcas Island, the base of operations since Earth Day, as we traveled from BC down to Des Moines, Washington, to bring you interviews and events around the Salish Sea. I typically like to take advantage of the trip back to Minnesota to cover a park in Big Sky Country, and still hope to do so, possibly from Theodore Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota. In the past, the Public Lands Podcast has podcasted from Yellowstone, including in winter, the Berkeley Pit in Butte, Montana, among other locales around the Mountain West. Once back in Minnesota, things will start ramping up for fall as Minnesota and the Upper Midwest become not only our renewed focus for interviews and events, but also the base of operations from which guest reporters will bring stories from throughout the continent and, on occasion, beyond. We'll focus on the Upper Midwest until about mid-October, and then we'll broaden our scope so that interviews, special reports, and occasionally even live events can be podcasted from throughout North and Central America, such as our special week of podcasts from Costa Rica coming up in the winter. Meanwhile, the news roundup, as always, will touch on everything from local to global issues. First, let's touch on what's happening in Somerset, England. Andy Gregory of the Independent newspaper tells us that the Frome River turned bright electric blue on Saturday for reasons that remain unknown. He notes that Environmental Agency has recently sprayed the river with hydrogen peroxide in an attempt to boost oxygen levels. That happened after thousands of fish washed up on the shores of the river, dead for reasons unknown, but assumed to have something to do with being deprived of oxygen in the polluted waters of the river. Among the fish affected were thousands of trout and bullheads. UK rivers are saturated with more microplastics per meter than the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, according to a Greenpeace study, with the Mersey, a river running from the Manchester suburbs to Liverpool Bay, being the most polluted of the lot. On a related note, a study conducted at Harvard determined that mercury levels are rising in commercially caught fish. That was counterintuitive finding, because it was believed that the mercury levels would be going down. As you probably know, mercury accumulates in the larger predators at the top of the food chain, to the point that orca whales, for example, beluga and other top predators in the sea, are reaching dangerous levels of mercury, and mercury levels are on the rise for tuna, swordfish, salmon, and other large fish that we commonly eat as well. According to the author of the study, Elsie Sunderland, in a story by Sophie Lewis of CBS News, fish remains a healthy choice if the consumer chooses fish from sustainable fisheries, and mercury levels, while potentially a future concern, is not currently a major concern for most people. But pregnant women, for example, should talk to their doctors about consuming the right kinds of fish as it relates to mercury. And we're speaking about ocean fish here, because mercury levels in wild-caught freshwater fish are often far higher. So, why the rising levels of mercury in commercially caught ocean fish? As herring stocks are depleted by overfishing, these predators are adapting by eating larger fish that have accumulated more mercury. This is another reminder of how, within a complex ecosystem, one action, such as overfishing herring, has unanticipated outcomes for other species, including our own, as we eat the salmon, swordfish, and other fish from the sea. Moving on shore, Halifax, Nova Scotia is dealing with a problem plaguing communities throughout the world: dog poop. As an aside, before we get to that story, I would note that whenever I talk to local environmental officials, wherever they might be, dog feces is one of the top problems they complain about. When asking what students might be able to do as communication projects to help steward local parks and waters, for example, dog poop is often issue number one. People tend not to realize that not only the feces left in the park, which most diligent dog owners pick up most of the time, but also that in their backyards, makes it into our waterways. The material environment tends not to distinguish between public and private lands, and both impact the other. And so Halifax is rolling out their Canines for Clean Water campaign after detecting alarming levels of canine fecal matter in local lakes and streams. Halifax launched a petition/pledge to be signed by dog owners and is pushing to educate dog owners about the need to properly handle and discard their dog's poop. Which naturally brings us to Wisconsin, where fecal matter has been found in the majority of private wells by researchers working in the southwestern part of the state. Most of that fecal matter is from humans and livestock. Mark Borchardt, a research microbiologist for the U.S. Agricultural Research Service, notes that, quote, "As a researcher of groundwater for 25 years now, I continue to be amazed by the level of fecal contamination in Wisconsin groundwater." Of course, this comes as no surprise to those of us from Minnesota, but it does explain why everyone from Wisconsin is full of crap. I would like to issue an insincere apology to all listeners from Wisconsin and do have to admit that in all likelihood, the same is true for private wells in much of the southern half of Minnesota as well, as it is a very real and growing problem in much of the world. Of course, dealing with such issues requires concerted action at all levels, from government on down to residents, and the stewardship organizations that form the core of this podcast are essential at all of those levels, especially in educating, organizing, and mobilizing local citizens to take action. However, there are things that we can do as individuals to help somewhat, including becoming more conscious of our consumption choices and behaviors. Although it will do nothing to help the collective problem or even collective adaptation to pollution, I do want to end by touching on a sign of our times news story from India. Air pollution is the third leading cause of death on the subcontinent. So, U.S.-based Headwaters Incorporated rolled out a new invention in 2018, the Air Tamer, a personal mobile air purifier that the company claims can remove many airborne pollutants. You wear the Air Tamer around your neck. It is available in the U.S. as well, but the company has been targeting India in particular, given the severity of air pollution there. Let's hope that we can find ways to deal with the root problems of air pollution instead of simply having to adapt individually as income and technology allows. The future could be the kind of clean air signaled by healthy moss and other epiphytes in our forests, or the kind where those of us that can afford to find ways to simply avoid the increasing pollution surrounding us, that we take those measures. Hopefully, it'll be the former. But to end on a much more hopeful note in that regard, next week we'll be returning to interviewing those that are leading the effort to create a more sustainable, just, and healthy world for all living creatures, including Homo sapiens. Upcoming live exchanges include two interview concerts from the Minnesota State Fair, and a few that will allow us to travel out into rural Minnesota to interact with friends of groups working in parks there. So stay tuned for those upcoming shows. Until then, I hope you get a chance to enjoy a park, river, or lake near you.